Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
strategic summary of the different zones of activity I have and a bit of a background for it. So the sort of three zones of activity is sort of exercise, rehab, some social experiments or things that I'm working on, and some electronics. The three areas, and I'll give a little bit of a background to it. The important thing is that this is sort of an update, but not an in-your-face update. So when you're actually in rehab working on things, you're not a commercial quantity. You're not employed. You're not doing a recognisable project. So after a certain while, a certain amount of time, you sort of drop off the radar, and you have to be alert enough to realise that you drop off the radar. There's nothing wrong with that. People have got certain things they have to do in their life. They have to attend to things that pay them money and be interested in certain things. So that drops off the radar. But on the other side of the thing, you can't just be relying on other people to be continuously interested in what you're doing to sort of get a continuity, a thread, a fabric of events, which goes that A leads to B leads to C. You can't have it at all relying on external influences, unfortunately. And I think a lot of people do that. They go to work, and what do they do? The next thing they do all depends what the company tells them. And so you're in this area here. So I've been chugging away, and every once in a while I send an email out for people to help me and stuff like that. But in general, I'm being progressively left alone, and it doesn't really concern me all that much because I've got such a big task ahead of me. And so this is a summary for a friend, Andrew, who's a really great connections person, but needs a finished product. And I'm in to communicate or to get enthusiastic or connect about. I'm in the process of getting towards some finished products there, hopefully. And so, as it would happen, you keep quiet, you keep on working, slaving away on it, and working forward. So that's the story of it. Now, just to give a little bit of a background to the podcasting. So I've had the problem, I suppose, of being able to breathe, speak, put sentences together, and slowly build things up. And while I was doing that, the way to do it, if no one's actually giving you therapy, you actually do a podcast. So at least it's out there, and it's communicating to someone. So it's a bit hard to actually speak without actually thinking that you're actually giving out there. And little by little, I worked at solved. It doesn't sound very big, but solved basic problems about how to actually get the information off your. Well, firstly, how to record it, get it on dictaphone, the components there, and all the software battles to actually produce a piece of robotic software which actually does what Audacity or your podcasting software does, and that is take, manipulate, and do all the various things. Now, of course, when you buy some code, you're actually paying money not to solve these problems. And of course, I didn't pay the money. I've had to solve all these problems. I've learnt a little bit, and I sort of learnt more on it. And I've also sort of had to build software around the fact that our internet connection is so lousy. There's sort of a thought that we were going to give a gift to East Timor of connecting them up to our national broadband network, and that sort of, oh my god. But when we do get national broadband, that will improve things. So I've had to actually build things such that when they fall over, they tell you how they've fallen over, and they don't fall completely over, they fall a little bit over, and so you can pick it up and put things, cache things such that when it's produced something, it puts it in an area, and then the internet upload can actually just look at it and try and upload it. So that's taken a little bit, and just the sheer volume and the ability to podcast. So in this case, I have something to say, and it's part of the mental preparation. You say, oh, I want to speak to someone, I've got to prepare what I'm going to say, and you, podcasting is sort of a way of preparing it. I'm sure that there's other areas that I have to really, really push on. People have noted that I've been able to describe things. So the very first, so that's the background. We've got the two elements of background, the fact that you're working on projects, but they're not socially, they don't have social currency. They've got rehab currency, but not social currency, so people aren't going to respond or respond to it. And then there's podcasting, which you, this is a podcast, and it has the ability to take it up, and it's sort of the pinnacle of solving a whole range of technical problems so that I can actually podcast. So let's get back on. So that's the background for it. So let's get on to the various areas. Now, in terms of actual physical rehab, I've got sort of two aspects. That's physical and cognitive rehab. So cognitive is brain training programs, and for all these, it's not separate. You've actually got to try and mix the two together to get effective build-up and growth, and also vary the sort of social situations you're in. It's all varying and challenging and stress and all that type of stuff. So when I first came out of the heart operation, I could barely walk across the room, and then the stairs, and then going around, walking around the house, and doing all the various various things, and then going for walks around the street, realizing that certain grades I couldn't do, going to Google Maps, looking at where the grades are, planning a route for that you could manage, and then slowly challenging, podcasting while walking, not necessarily the best thing to do for the poor audience. They hear a truck go past, or I stop when a dog's biting, or I'm walking in the bush and I get a spider's web on me. It may be interesting, or even just sitting out here, I get attacked by parrots from time to time and stuff like that. Reading through, so just gradually going up. Then exercise, as we go up the proper hospital rehab, where they get you boxing and, you know, balancing, doing all that sort of thing. So you sort of get a taste of knowing that you have to do that thing and seeing the benefit of trying to balance and talk and box. And, you know, they didn't quite have me on an exercise ball boxing, but they certainly had a lot of those things. And the slow push-up and the realizing that you're a lot better off than those people with the two knee replacements who are just, you know, overweight and really trying to do it. But you can see the message gets through to you that you got to knock down your weight. And you got to push on that, and that's a real struggle. Now, in terms of the actual physical stuff, it's fantastic being able to breathe so well. It's such a great thought, and not have what physically is in you is weak. You don't realize it at the time, but you're very protective of it. You can't sneeze or take shocks or things like that. You tend to avoid all that type of stuff. And it's sort of getting back, definitely getting back into sneezing. I absolutely enjoy sneezing. I almost do a high five and I sneeze, and oh shit, my chest isn't feeling so it's going to break apart. Wow, whoa! And I've sneezed and people walked on, and I'm still doing the high five at the top of, you know, it's a bit of a strange thing. So the next thing, I know you're into physical fitness and physical fitness for kids, not for us oldies. And there's a little bit of a story behind that. And so what I've been doing is going to the gym, this fitness gym. I decided it's best to pull out of this exercise physiologist, a bit claustrophobic, and go in at gym. And what I'm trying to do is I've built up from being over there a week or so, built up from 1 hour to 2 hours, and slowly increasing the range. And part of the cognitive stuff is having study books in front of you, so you're studying while you're running. You can't podcast while you're running because it's good. As my wife pointed out, it sounds as though you're having sex while podcasting. That's actually not the actual the story you want to get out to there for the kiddies. And it's sort of an effort. And this areas that I'm trying to study while podcasting. Then it occurred to me, this is something I'd like to chat with you, is to get a tablet with a brain training app to brain train while running. And that means there's a couple of things I have to do. I have to get one of the Apple Watches, which monitor the heart rate, because I'm all heart rate limited, or not limited, I just keep the heart rate building up to a certain point. And then on exercise bikes, they have a heart rate variability program, and you program it on. So that's fairly straightforward. But this is one of the things I want to look at, is getting a tablet or a 2-in-1 PC. And I'm just looking at the moment, and there's sort of no appetite for spending any more money on me at home for it. So I've got to try and see if I can find a tablet somewhere and get the brain training on that. The other thing is that it means that by actually having a block of time where you go, I suppose I should run to the gym. I'll eventually run to the gym. But getting the a fixed amount of time where you're actually doing gym work for 2 hours, and the brain train, if I could get that together, that would be an ideal thing. And I'm sort of intensely aware in that I'm an excellent person who runs the gym. I wrote a letter to him. Wrote a long letter saying that I've got to do this, and this. Give it to you anyway, and I sort of understand at this stage there's that communication. If you'd like the sort of like the entire floor sorting out, all the complex communication isn't there. So this is one of the major things that I'm looking at the moment. I'm at the cusp of looking at it, and so what happens is I think I did 2 hours on Tuesday, an hour on Wednesday, and yesterday I was too, I had to stay at home looking after, I couldn't leave in the evening to do it, and I just got so tired. And so tonight I'll have another go for another 2 hour session. So I'm nowhere near there, but the idea is, and I think it's really important for people in my category. I know you're focusing on another category, but in terms of cognitive rehab, to get up there. Now, just for instance, we went to together to a robotics lecturer. Actually, I took copious notes, and at the end of it, next day I had certain points that I remembered. I couldn't structure. It was just really, really, really painful to go on. So I've got to go on that. So that's the sort of first thing. This is a tablet. I think that's what they're called, tablets. At a reasonable size. And unfortunately, the most I've got access is to my phone, a bit too small. And I've also got to hook up a smartwatch to get going. And so if we can seal it off, the next sort of thing is a more complex thing. So I've had, it's hard to say, like you've got motivation, observation, but communication isn't there. So you can, and that sort of means that because you can't communicate as well as you'd like. And this, so I think there's two aspects to it. One is the sort of background, my technical background. I tend to be over technical, poor communicator anyway. Then plus the stroke makes it difficult to get across. But it also means that socially you're pushed away from a situation, but at a social distance from a situation, it means that your observation is more clear. And one of the sort of astounding things I had, and you also have to understand that the the heart operation. It affects a whole lot of things. There's the vagus nerve which goes down. You know, there's heaps of really complex nerves which go down there, and there's your you can actually lose your voice because your vocal cords actually, just due to evolution, the actual nerve goes down and over through the aortal arch. There's a nerve traveling through there, as if it's not, you know, a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right. And you can lose your voice. So this is one of the things from heart operations. There's a lot of things going on, and if you get heart disease, you get depressed. And there's also depression after your heart thing. Now, for me, I'm pretty sure I was pretty elated to be alive. Sort of what happens is, as a quantum physicist, in the cat in the box is both alive and dead. It's a superposition of wave functions you don't know until you open the box. And so for me, when I'm going under, I was going to be both alive. I know it sounds crazy, but sort of that was the actual thought thing. And I was been fairly elated ever since, obviously, and especially the sheer joy of various, you know, sort of stroke things resolving itself. Yeah, it's a big slip. I do have a I can't actually celebrate with you because I haven't been able to tell you what was wrong before, but now it's better. I now know it's just too complicated. The people say, look at their watch and want to move on, but you're still having a little party by yourself. So there's this. So a lot of people. There's genetic reasons for heart conditions, but there's also people who are in bad lifestyles, and by choice or by what situation or a group gets into the bad lifestyle. So it's truck drivers. I'm not making a. I don't want to do. You know, don't make jokes about truck drivers. They'll come and drive a truck to your place. But they are often quite abused people, you know, having to reach schedules and stuff like that, and not necessarily the best diet and high vibration. They've got everything aligned up to it, and you get a lot of angry people. A lot of people, not the heart condition doesn't. The bottom line is that I would say a good half. No, I'd say 70% of people don't do enough rehab after heart operations. They don't take it seriously enough. They sort of want to take it a bit light. Then there's probably 40%. I'm not kidding. 40%. These are the people. So what happens is you have your heart operation, and then you go, God, I've got to push myself. I don't know what. Yeah. You have to push yourself, and you do your round of the wards, and you say hello to various people. This is one of the interesting things, is that one of the things you can't do in a hospital is high five the scrub people, because they've just scrubbed up. Doesn't occur to me. However, so a remarkable. I suppose it's not a really good survey, but the people will say that. I've been told what to do all my life, and now I've had a heart condition, and I'm not going to do anything more with it. So you pick up, and it's, I don't know, they can put a lot of negative things to you, or that they feel that they haven't, you know, there's a lot of mental problems being taken into there. There was one person who rocked up for the heart operation, and they scanned them, and they said, look, you don't need it. And this person was quite angry they weren't getting a heart operation. I would have went, whoa. You know, I'm cured, I don't know, I would have said a miracle or something like that. But you get these crazy people, and a lot of, I suppose, mental dark cloud. There's sort of, the dark cloud sort of follows people into it, and it's a sort of fairly, it's good in hospital rehab, there's a big room of people, but for yourself, there's many, many lonely hours of just hitting the road. It's sort of like that. What women really want or something like that. I can't remember. This is the Nike, your only friend, your friend is the tarmac. Or it's sort of like swimming, black lining, sort of where people just swim and they see a black line after it. And of course, this is a bit of a problem in that the hospital rehab is a big social element plus the rehab. So it's all plus to get the people to do the rehab and do it. And it's just the amount of effort to really pick up and go. And you're up against it because you know you're on the dying days. Your make and model is a bit out. They're not making parts for it anymore. It falls off. They just sort of go on. We'll resell you for slightly less money. You know, it's sort of this rundown thing. So it's very hard to get into. So if I can put that's the situation as it is, sort of a negative cloud coming in with people, not from the hospitals necessarily, but from relatives and stuff like that, a negative sense of cloud. So I think patients and people have they sort of have a sense of loss coming in. So the first situation. Let's recap. The first situation I was looking at is getting tablets. And blood oath, I don't have an access of a good tablet. I'll do it. And within the next week or so, I'll go and find some way of getting up there to do it. That's the first one. The second one is, how can we reconfigure this such that it really works? How can we... The information is going in and it's getting blocked by relatives, blocked by people, blocked by experience. Then it's not happening. Then it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that if you don't do rehab, you don't recover. And I knew I shouldn't have been doing rehab because I haven't recovered. This type of very sort of passive view. And it's sort of basically a marketing thing. So you've got this massive heart operation. So they split you down the middle. They have a little jigsaw, cut your sternum in half. Then pick you up, then they have to unwrap various, you've got layers of wrapping, if you can imagine, sort of like packing a good from overseas. You've got one cavity layer that has to be lifted up, and then your heart's in wrapping, and it takes a lot. And you're just not for 6 weeks, you're stuffed. That's another thing, that for 6 weeks you can't rehab from get-go. 6 weeks where you have got a broken bone, you're like a broken leg, and you have to rehab after. So the general gist is, how does a marketer get around this particular problem? And if you've got a really boring product which has just got an advantage, but it's only a 1% advantage, which you're not going to see, and you can easily just have someone shout and do a jingle over it, you run a competition. You say, you enter this for a chance to win a cruise for such and such, such and such. And sort of, there's a big picture of the cruise and stuff like that. And thing. And this is associated with that. You enter this competition. You could be one of five lucky people who might win something. Look, I must admit, I've never been in any one of those. I've been into a few Easter egg competitions, and the competitions run in general and look, I have a lucky number which has won over and over again. I don't understand why it always wins, but it's a lucky number. I'm not going to say what it is, there's the entire issue that if the message is really complex and it's got lots of moving parts and stuff like that, rather than going into it and actually trying to re-engineer it, create a diversion. And so this is the idea. This is idea number two. Diversion number two is that for Christmas, I can buy, you know how you buy for Christmas a goat. You can buy a goat for Africa. Here you go. I have bought you 100 kilograms of poo, and it's been delivered to a grateful group in Myanmar. That's what you can do that. Now, that's a little bit complex, but that's the general idea. So you can donate to buy heart surgery, not for the person you hate down the road or something like that, but for someone who's really in the shit. They might be in an island, or a lot of the little islands dotted throughout the Pacific, or in Papua New Guinea or Timor or stuff like that. People who, you know, are in the Australian fold of we care about you, you know, enough, and we can say, look, I don't have a heap of money. I've got $50, you know, sort of if I found it in my purse, or $50 I found under floorboard, you know, some reason, or someone overpaid me. I feel guilty about it. I don't know why people don't donate, but they say they do donate, and if you've got a scheme like it, it can actually go into school donations. So that they buy this. But what they do buy is that they buy a token, a rehab token, which can be released by someone in hospital legitimately actually doing reaching a rehab target, losing a kilogram here, or a waist measurement here, or doing 6 hours, stuff like that. And so what can happen is that you can actually create this system where people can actually do rehab, and their rehab can release the money to go overseas. Now, it's got the advantage that you can tell the person, the relative, that this is really important. It's a good cause. It will help your thing. It will also help this person, because it's so important that these people get proper rehab and support overseas. So it's a sort of way of having a conversation about it without putting it directly in them. I don't know if we go through that process again. So I have a system where I can donate money to an organisation. The organisation then awards tokens to hospitals or groups, and the group committee can therefore award tokens to which get released when, I know people, cynics will laugh at this, but it gets released when a rehab person goes across. Now, you can instantly say, well, why not just give the money? Well, doing it this way allows you to have a conversation with the hospital staff and people like that, and they can start to talk about other things. And look, the majority of think people may not be interested, but say if it just 1%, small program goes 1%. This is the entire whole thing of rehab. There's no low-hanging fruit. It's just, you know, a huge push. So that's the idea of to get something up. So let's do a summary. This is the iPad or the tablet on the exercise machine, and just working towards that. And in order to that, and the second thing is this rehab token system that a truly mad person would think of. And this is, I suppose, the beauty of this, in that bits of your brain intact, and you sort of stand back and watch your own madness happen. So to go across there. Now, how do we go from the idea to implementation on either of these? And dare I say, this same solution will go forward. So we've got the problem, the solution. Now the problem of implementing the solution. So I've got a problem, I've got a solution, but now I have a problem of getting that solution up and running. In both cases, and in all cases forward, is the formation of an expert working group. And this is from studying something called transdisciplinary studies. And this is the fact that If you look in any place, why things aren't happening is that people have come from different groups and have different languages and have different expectations, and you've got these different groups really struggling to get forward. And so, rather than actually getting investing in it, you actually stand back and you work out, well, what can I do in terms of a transdisciplinary team? So, in a certain sense, the cardiac thing is a transdisciplinary team. It's just you've got all these disciplines and you're getting a mechanism for the work through. However, there is, besides that, in the field of transdisciplinary, there's a planning transdisciplinary team called an expert working group. Expert working group is something which I've come to look at, and I sort of do have basically one expert working group, sort of a mega expert working group. But the idea is that you go into your group and you're in there as your individual. So the work within that group can't be published to the outside world. You can't. It's actually invisible to the outside world. You may, if you want to get a press statement out, you have to actually the press statement may refer to it. So originated from the expert working group. But what you put in there is completely confidential and is basically your opinion. And your company name or your affiliation is not in there with you. It's in the background as part of your CV. You're in there as individuals. Now, this is to the idea of getting an expert working group. So for the cardiac one, I need perhaps a cardiologist, an exercise physiologist, someone from charity, say, Peter Costello, something like that. Is that Peter? Oh, I've forgotten his other name. Just to look at whether we can get it together, an expert working group. And with that, you can actually, it sort of comes from the idea of an expert working group is similar to clusters, industry clusters, where the industries work together on a net project, put things together, a cluster to do it. And the idea behind clusters, the theory of clusters, is that if one industry has its time, its cluster, and wants to move out, it can move out, but another one can move in. So the project can proceed without it. Now, it's necessarily from the cluster stuff that I've researched and looked at. It's not necessarily in-your-face economics. That is, you then create a new market, a new set of products, a new way of doing things which people by themselves couldn't do, but by collaboration couldn't go. You can see sort of there's a big bird battle happening up here. So here, if you look at the heart people, the people aren't doing rehabilitation because they've had the wrong attitude. Other people, the communication can't happen. Again, we have not people getting, so that's at one level. So they almost need their own expert working group around them. This is to get another expert working group to work out how to do it. So it's just putting it up there. Now, of course, this type of stuff is not, in general, the stuff for communication. Well, how are you doing? Well, I've got to build a brick wall. I've got to water a garden. This is all things I have to do. I don't have to build a brick wall, but I have to really get in and do some gardening, that type of stuff. There's an expert working group in this. People go, I'm really not interested in it. And of course, that sort of person is not ideal for the expert working group. It's, you almost need an expert working group on how to get expert working groups. Now, on that, we'll go to the next thing. You can hear the bell around me. The next thing is Sort of social structure projects, like I'm working in the Glenbrook Historical Society, putting together the web resource and understanding this well enough to stand back and let them direct what happens in the web and try to organise, connect things together. There's a sort of a dearth of soft skills going up to meet people and talk to people and activities and restructuring things and stuff like that. So there is a series of things I'm doing with the Glenbrook Historical Society, which are using my sort of understanding of documentations and communication, stuff like that, and how that goes together and who gets involved in it to actually progress it. And so I'm hopefully building structures there. That sounds a bit complex, and so complex I can't really talk about it, but it's just sort of flagging it's there. The other sort of group I'm involved in is with the RSL. So as you would know from many years ago, I was in the Army Reserve. It turned out there's a tour of 15 years, which is actually a long time. For most people, it spend only 6 years or 9 years in the Army, so that's apparently a long time. But the people I know, my friends, they're generals and various things. So they're very long-term things. And again, this is something that you sit back and you don't push too hard. They ask you to do things, and you do them as best as you can, but you don't push too hard. So that comes up. I'm just thinking back to reversing back to the Glenbrook Historical Society. There's skill stuff which I still, you know, they've asked me to do. It's just, you know, I can do it. It's just a bit scary, so to speak. But getting back there, I've looked at from studying and researching for it. I've sort of done various military podcasts. I've podcast the entire Japanese, I don't know, analysis of how they beat the Australians. There was a book called Australia, Japan's Greatest Victory, and I read that through, and it's quite just stomach turning. I just nothing made me more sick than reading that one. Reading that Australian zombie myths about it. So this is about the military stuff, but sort of academic analysis of it. And one of the things you realise is that there's a disparity between what actually happened on the ground and what our Anzac celebrations are, and that's one aspect. But there's also a disparity between the worship of the old veterans and the young kids coming through. And so what I wanted to do is the following thing, be no surprise that my general thoughts are we'll get an expert working group, and my cluster theory is that you try one person, they're not interested, go to the next, push along, and this basic in it doesn't work, or let's put in something else is basic research scientist stuff. So my initial proposal was that you rock up in the RSL car and out pops 8 drones, and they fly around your football field laying out the football field. So that's just another walk in the park, another day in the office for me. A day in the office is always got negative connotations. It means that it's absolute disaster, but you know what's going on. It's another walk in the park. So it's be pretty nothing to program a series of drones to fly out and put markers where they're required. That for me is an engineering challenge that'd be worthwhile looking at. But then putting it through the RSL, there's something going on, some sort of sequence of events from various military campaigns, negative views, people are sort of like sitting on this huge pendulum where they swing forward and against with and want to work out where that pendulum is in terms of the sense of feeling, sort of. There's, you know, old people can have quite negative attitudes to young people, or stereotypical things, or a view which is true, but it's only one side of it. If you sort of look, so they're always on their mobile phones, but there's sort of no understanding of what they're doing on their mobile phones or how that's structured for. So this one was a bit high tech. So no, we don't do that. We do traditional building, 1920s cenotaphs, and the uniform and the slow march and the political speeches. And the other interesting thing is the RSL's is a highly recognised political brand. So a politician does kisses baby, puts down Reeves and various things. If the RSL can actually cut you out, stop you, allow you on your photo opportunity, because they always show politicians going forward and you know, there's one thing that they will talk about, this person who's perhaps, you know, well, I'm not saying they're all morally compromised, but he's morally compromised, saying these Australian diggers, they didn't know anything, and they gave all their true stuff, and they showed true myth. But the bottom line is, it's not, I don't know the word, it's not hypocrisy, it's just, they're just not the people necessarily to work with, to get going, because that they just can't think. It's sort of like I think in officer training, where you have people out there, and it takes a little while to actually click on to say, you're not supposed to judge the moral ethics of that person up on the hill shooting down at you. You've got to actually protect your people, go up and listen to orders and do it. It's just a very subtle thing. So I don't know. Okay, that being said, so you can at the very start, so I'm getting together obviously an expert working group on this ANZAC Dam. So from April to August, which is what, for 4 months, Australians and New Zealanders were pinned down to 1 square kilometre of beachhead. We arrived there, and we didn't make our, we sort of made our objectives. We didn't make our objectives on the first day, and we got pinned down there for 4 months. 4 months in, the British landed a big invasion above, you know, to the north of us, and lost more troops than us, just as a joke. And we sort of increased our territory holding by a factor of four. This was extremely bloodily fought by both the Australians and the Turks. So 4 square kilometres, which is pretty much the area of Glenbrook, and this all happened in 9 months. So the idea is that the drones, they're just not going to do it. However, there's a sort of concept of, I don't know, the people take ideas and they shuffle across their desk, and they actually don't own a research and idea. So the next version of this is, rather than drones, you get the school kids to do it, and you start to actually map the skills they have in doing it. So they have a map, and then they have to lay that map out on a field. Now, it certainly becomes very apparent the strategies here. So the British Navy was being blocked to access to Constantinople to bombard it to win the war. So it would have closed up World War One really pretty quickly. So the ANZACs were there on a cutting motion up, and we're going to cut across, destroy the Turkish naval defences, and allow the British Navy in. At least that's not communicated very well. So the sequence is that you set up a 1 to 200 map on the oval, and you then have 1 minute equals 1 month. And so in 9 minutes, they actually go through the entire campaign, and just cranking it through the research, the department guidelines means this, what to do. So at the start, you have a coin toss for who's going to be Turkish, who's going to be Australian. So you get the message that that history's not a it's not determinant. A lot of people wind up where they are due to coin tosses. I sort of like that. So there's a whole series of things to go ahead. And part of the working group, we've approached, not state schools, because we're using up the state schools with the, with the Global Historical Societies. But in general, the schools here, they're not trained for expert working groups. They're not trained to interact with society in a complex way. They're very much, I'm going to sit within my bunker and wait for people to come up and offer me things, sort of like a puppet show. Like society is a puppet show for them to come up across. And so there's the top of, I've got scouts looking at it, and perhaps someone in your area might be able to look at doing it, say as a sports star thing at the Sydney Olympic Park, just as a small activity to get up, and just slowly build it up. And once it's written up in the RSL magazine, I'm sure we can spread it. And there's very similar things to that in the Glenbrook Historical Society, and this is just the understanding that the people aren't trained for community interaction, and that's why you're not getting a lot of it from the schools, because a lot of the teachers sit there on their ass, as they should, because they're supposed to be looking at the kids all the time and things. There's just not the training to actually work on a multidisciplinary team to push it forward. So that's a worthwhile thing. So it's sort of an overarching thing that we, it's sort of not something to write to the news about, but we're not very good on this multidisciplinary team. Now we come to the electronics. So about November last year, I can't remember when we went out, I began to say, sort of chart out strategically where I had to go with electronics, what were the major things. And I did my sort of a salutary lesson. I sort of wrote to a few friends in universities and really pushed them to see if they could help me do these, you know, set out on these massive electronics projects. And so the major electronics product project for me as a quantum physicist, so you've got to understand that you've got around you, you've studied quantum physics, and you got into used to the fact that no one understood it, but you could go into a lab and twiddle a knob and get something to happen, and people would still think it was a miracle, even though it was just quantum physics. So you not that you got cynical about it, but it's just got a bit tough over time. So you have that in the background, and then you got this news saying where everyone's sort of not talking to you as a baby, but sort of just, you're deluded. You're just, so if you were right, you'd be famous. And you say, no, I'm right, because I can calculate that and I can do these calculations, and this is right. And so in that general thing, there's this pretty incredible stuff. Let's talk about the star stuff is incredible, but the fundamental electron is incredible in that it has got 720 degrees rotational symmetry. That is, you have to spin around twice before you get... You know how you normally in a car have to turn a car around a roundabout once? In the quantum world, the roundabout has not four lanes in, but eight lanes in. You have to go around twice. You have to go around twice the roundabout to go back out. Now, this is true. And what's also true is that electrons can't spin. Electrons have spin. They're objects. But they can't actually rotate. But what they do is that they can actually be pulled inside out like a sock. This is all true. It's like everything in society is built on these properties. Computers, absolutely everything. And if all this is true, I should be able to put a crystal in a magnetic field, and it should, as the magnetic field changed, mysteriously start to rock. This is interesting. I checked it out, and this view was the Einstein to Hass view. And Einstein, after his famous paper on general relativity and written in World War I as the Anzacs were on the beach, he's for several years worked on the Einstein to Hass project and made a crystal that began to rotate in the magnetic field. Now, Einstein made a mistake. Well, he didn't make a mistake. He waited before de Hass had really finished his work. He waited till de Hass was working, and his work hit Einstein's calculations. He published them. Went out, they went, and then his work continued proving his calculations wrong. It's one of these sort of interesting things. It's sort of the interesting road, quantum road that Einstein could have taken, but he just didn't take. And the quantum world didn't happen until 26. It didn't work out. So they didn't know what they were looking for. And so this legendary pendulum is something so incredibly hard to make that in the 1960s they eventually made credible Einstein-Hass pendulums, and they had to magnetically shield them. The Earth's magnetic shield field was there. And so I thought, this was electronics, the physical world, that will actually prove quantum mechanics to myself. If that doesn't work, perhaps everyone around me is right. But if it does work, it does oscillate, I'm right, and quantum physics is right, and that's all true, and it's worth rehabbing down there. I sort of like this, look like a flashlight down the rehab road of quantum physics. How are we going to rehab this fundamental aspect? Even though quantum physics is really obvious wherever you look, this is something which sort of crosses into the world. So this Einstein to Hass pendulum, and bit by bit, about Christmas, I was getting to oscillate. And what happened is that I started off with some really crude stuff. Basically, I had a mechanical relay. Back in the days of Einstein, it's getting to oscillate. But then I could see that there could be... It was just too good. And I began to make a better and better pendulum. And then solve one problem after the other and eliminate errors and stuff like that. And eventually I was able to lay the pendulum on its side and put it on a little spice table there on a bathroom tile, and run it. And then the electronics every month, every 2 months, I went 10 years ahead up using these programmable, basically the chips have become so small that you actually buy a board what used to be a chip is now a board with a whole family of chips, microscopic chips. You don't need a microscope. You need a magnifying glass to see them. You don't need a microscope quite yet. And the chips have become so small you can't solder them anymore. And then they've become idiot-proof. Thank goodness, because I've been able to push them. And so the science under has a pendulum. Then went through the, oh, you know, I've built this and then built that. What's that? Oh, that's... Like, I was involuntarily following research development protocols. And so I developed the concept prototype. From the concept prototype, guided the research prototype. From the research prototype, did the design, the production prototype. And in the production prototype, I basically experimented and put a LCD display. I began to learn how to put LCD displays on. And eventually, for a while there, I then almost involuntarily sort of said, okay, right, well, this is right there. I'm going to have to overpower it here to see where it fails. And of course, it did fail. It did melt the little Chinese electromagnet, and killed it. And I had to wait for 6 weeks to order new electromagnets in. But sort of afterwards, I'm still... Why did you do that? And of course, it's sort of so ingrained that if you're building something, you build it, you drop it. In this case, you try and take it into the city to show people. You just do some basic experiments once you build it on the lab bench and you overpower it to see, oh, well, I now know this will last forever because it's now, I'm doing it at 75%. The energy that's there, and you leave it for a while and you see how it goes off, and you measure it over time, and you run through all these protocols. And so just by chance it's in a clear box, and it's now something that we no longer have to lie to the kids. We can say, here's some quantum physics, here's in a box, and it's, you know, it's just plug in and it works. And from the shrapnel of the equipment of the research prototype, so the research prototype was big to allow you to put in fields and do rotate things like from that, and from the destroyed equipment, the salvaged equipment, I built another thing, which is the same basic principles, but to allow kids to access it, to put their hands in and hands on, whereas the Haas pendulum is a bit delicate. That's the second thing. And the third thing is, well, what have we learnt from this? I should be able to do something very light, and a sort of a laboratory thing which does all of science. So this is one thing. This does all of science. So I get every experiment done at school and feed that into a basic process which then designs the ultimate box, this battery-powered rechargeable box with sensors on it. And this is what I'll show you. And it publishes to a website, and then almost, look, I quite honestly don't understand why I order some parts, but they arrive and I go, oh, I can use that. That's exactly what I needed. I wonder why I did order it. It's just this bizarre process. So we're up to, the Einstein to Haas is way, way ahead of the field, and it's interesting in this period, you know, this period I've described where people want to interact with you if you can employ them, if you can sell them something, if you're social. I'm not social currency. So what's meant is that I've been left out to actually produce this type of stuff. And so on Saturday, I will show you this system. This system will combine the Fembot technology and the new robotic technology, and the sensors. Well, blood oath, if I'm doing a sensor, it's going to be very good. So there's five sensors which read accurately to a quarter of a degree, and then there's take about 10 seconds to what, 10 seconds, a minute to get to stuff. Then I've got these other sensors which I'm slowly engineering, slowly solving problem by problem, knocking over problem after problem. And this is amazing thing is you go through, and indeed out there in Civvy Street, there people are just working with crap equipment or crap code. So I'll bring it forward, and this thing will actually instruct. And as I'm working through, I have the problem is that one of the things that you're pushed aside is that you're teaching scientifically correct thing, but it's not what we teach at school. So I'll have a button on the device such that we'll be able to basically, I call it bullshit, it can go in the bullshit mode and actually tell people incorrect stuff. If that's what you want, if that's the only way this will get here, this has got that option, you can do it. Or it can actually go and give the full quantum mechanical description of what's going on. A bit of an effort to go across. So that's the situation, and it's a long, hard road, and I haven't actually kept up chatting with you, so that's where we are at the moment. And I'll go tomorrow, I'll show you the three boxes, the one with the duck, dancing duck, the Einstein de Haas experiment, and where I'm up to on the new robotic teaching device, and that's called Jigna. So Jigna is a Hindu word, a girl's name for a girl who's fascinated by everything and wants to know all about the world. Okay, thanks a lot for listening. Bye, Andrew.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.